You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. About a month ago, the FDA approved a first-of-its-kind therapy to treat people with sickle cell disease. The reason why this was such a big milestone is because it is the first treatment of its kind that uses gene editing. The technology is known as CRISPR, which modifies DNA, and it's really just the beginning. In Sacramento County, a biotechnology research center is diving into the world of stem cells and gene editing with the hope of speeding up advancements for new treatments and cures for patients diagnosed with cancer and other serious conditions, in some instances offering an alternative to chemotherapy or maybe even preventing a disease in the first place. Kate Spears is the CEO and founder of CGT Global. It's based in Folsom and joins us now to break down how this can lead to life-changing therapies. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me.
I would love to start with your background. How did you get involved in stem cells and gene editing?
So my background was actually, I used to be in healthcare and worked in an emergency room and thought I was going to be pre-med and an ER doctor at the time. I started working with transplant companies that were coming in to do transplantations. And I realized that most of the time, transplantation only really affects if you can get healthy tissue transplanted into someone else. But I saw all these patients dying from these diseases, and I knew that there were researchers out there that were struggling to get access to some of these tissues or blood samples from diseased patients. And so I initially kind of focused on that to try to help support research. You know, how can we partner with academic or private sector institutions and be able to get them the necessary access they need to these types of patients or just even diseased tissues that are going on in some of these surgeries?
So once that light bulb went off and then you obviously pivoted your career, as you continued to learn more, what are the biggest shortcomings that you discovered that you want to close?
Yeah, no, thank you. I think that one of the things that's fascinating about cell and gene therapies in general, and I think I get a lot of questions about this from the general public, trying to wrap their head around it. And I think the easiest way to maybe say this is that cell and gene therapies are essentially using those types of cell and gene therapies the same way we use drugs today or other treatments, but to actually treat someone's disease. And what's also amazing about that is that instead of people being on long-term medications, like in the pill form, some of these therapies actually cure diseases entirely, sort of irradiating the entire disease. That changes a couple major things that are coming out in our world today. So when you think about pharmaceutical companies that sort of, you know, bread and butter for them is in pills that ultimately treat patients. And I would say almost 6 years ago or so after I'd started this company, which is we're coming into our 14th year, if you could believe it. But about 6 years ago, I noticed that these pharma companies started creating presidents of cell and gene therapies within their own pharmaceutical companies because they understood that the world was going to start pivoting in medicine to actually being able to treat and permanently cure these diseases. And so the shortfalls kind of land in two buckets that I see today and that I'm really passionate about making a change at. One, supporting these therapies through the FDA. That's sort of crucial step one. Once these therapies get approved through the FDA, and they're starting to happen, just like that recent announcement on sickle cell, then how do we scale them into healthcare? And this is a big topic to unpack because when you think about it, it's about patient access, it's about medical equality, it's about what hospitals in town can you even go to get access to these therapies. And if you're a patient nowadays with access to the internet, you're Googling about this, right? You're looking at this and you're going online and you're realizing that there's these therapies and you want access. You want your insurance provider to cover it. You want your health local hospital to offer it. And so where we're really focused, especially within the region, is how can we expand that footprint? How can we open up medical access and just, you know, make it more available?
You bring up a really important point because when it comes to this recent FDA approval, NPR followed a patient who went through this for 4 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't only costly, it's an arduous process as
Absolutely.
Well. And there is just, you know, it physically as well, and I can't even imagine emotionally, as well as your family and loved ones, but it was costly. I mean, the treatment cost like $2.2 million.
Yep, sure did.
So how do you and your colleagues and people who are in support of this work to make it accessible to the most vulnerable people who would need something like this?
Absolutely. So I think the first part I'll talk about is cost. So right now, the way this has been handled is there's a lot of companies involved in trying to get those therapies not only finished, approved, then manufactured, then how do we get them thawed back and retransfused into a patient? So there's a lot of steps in that circle. And I think what we're trying to focus on is like if we can tighten that circle and reduce how much time it's like flying from here to Maryland to a facility to be manufactured back here to this country or back here to this state, right? And then for the example you said, these patients have to travel in lots of circumstances. They're taking tons of time off. It's you know, a whole life change to the way they're managing their disease today. So in trying to regionalize that and say, if we're partnered with a company, a pharma company that can manufacture this locally, then how can we then turn around and say, we don't have to have, you know, somebody travel to Texas or Sloan Kettering or Dana-Farber? How can we regionalize that access? And that also helps reduce the cost tremendously. The next part I think you mentioned in this and thinking about patient access broadly is that if you know people, right, and if you have good access in healthcare, you know, you can, and you have money, you can travel to the most cutting edge facilities in the world and try to, you know, move yourself up on the list to get access. What I'm really passionate is that we should be able to have, my dad was born in Arkansas, my mom was born in Missouri, so I've got the Midwest roots, but is that when you should have the same access to therapy in both those states that you should in Manhattan and California. And in order to do that, we have really developed at our company a way to kind of mobilize this, like whether or not it's with vehicles, whether or not it's home health, touching base, creating GMP laboratories that we can put in a hospital parking lot, put in these locations where we can start to funnel that in. And where I'm really focused, Vicky, today is what I call like the last mile to patients, is these therapies are coming. I don't know if you got a chance to even see, but there's 3,200 pending FDA approval today, 3,200. And so when we look at these handful that are just approved, we have an entire tidal wave coming to us, which is fabulous if you're a patient dying of a disease today. But how are we going to access that? How are we going to create these kind of accesses and get the hospitals online to be able to do this? And so we're partnering essentially between that pharma and hospital client and helping to elevate that and really speed up, scale the process, keep the cost downs for hospitals, keep the cost downs for patients by trying to kind of create a regionalized access.
And you're positioned for this wave that is coming. You mentioned that you're going to be entering your 14th year. Mm-hmm. What happened between 2010 and 2024? What have you been doing for more than a decade?
Yeah. There's so much. I mean, I would say that we have helped some of these therapies get approved by the FDA. We have worked with companies that are creating new blood tests. I say all the time, and I'm still shocked people don't realize this, today there's a blood test on the market that you can go have that will tell you if they find cancerous cells in your body. We helped three of those major companies actually develop those tests. So there's a lot available that I'm realizing more and more that our success, we used to always rank by, let's help them get through R&D, let's get through clinical trials, we'll help them get FDA approval, and then we would sort of celebrate. But honestly, on the backside, I would find that most people in the general public didn't even know these tests exist. Most of their healthcare partners didn't even have access to those tests to order. Mm-hmm. So that really pivoted me in the last few years to realize that we can't just celebrate the approval. We have to celebrate the execution of getting access to patients and getting it into the right hands and available at hospitals.
And obviously, you already have people who are going in and they're donating their blood or their bone marrow, cord blood. Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through how the process works?
Yeah, absolutely. So for those of you in the region, I mean, we have a clinic in Folsom where we accept like normal healthy donors, disease patients that are coming in, and we're, you know, have a whole program right now for seniors where we're really focused on collecting blood samples from seniors, and all part of different research studies and clinical trials that we're involved in that are supporting, honestly, globally. We ship products globally almost every day, but these are going to major academics in the country. They're going to private sector, device development companies, pharmaceutical companies to create these kind of access to different therapies. So yeah, our center, just for folks that are interested in that, you know, if you were to walk in today, you know, someone will talk to you and at least be able to say, hey, this is what you would qualify for if you want to participate and you want to be a part of that.
And so it's essentially you are helping in advancements in future treatments or even cures or even prevention in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what we've learned from over the years of doing this, I mean, we've had people staffed at hospitals for years. So even here, for example, Sutter Health, we have somebody there 24 hours, 24/7, 365 days a year. And to your point, exactly like you said, they may be working within collecting umbilical cord blood on one part of the floor. They may be transferring down and collecting a cancerous tumor sample from a patient on a different floor. We're trying not only from our own external locations, but also with our partnerships with healthcare, how can we broaden what we're doing with them, allow them to have more access to this kind of not only research, but as those researchers, the research products get improved to actual clinical therapies, we can use that same infrastructure with staffing to then do bedside and help the hospital be able to treat these patients so they're not having to do so much lifting on their side.
So if I understand this correctly, if this goes how you want it to go and it scales up the way you want it to scale up in, I don't know, years or decades from now, someone would go in and say potentially they received a serious diagnosis. There could potentially be a treatment for them or a cure. They would give their own blood or bone marrow, and then there would be some editing of their DNA. It would be put back into them, and then hopefully that would at least reduce or cure that ailment.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think when you see gene editing and CRISPR technology, CRISPR is a client of ours as well, but when you see that sort of gene editing happening, there's so much possibility to say if you carry the gene for breast cancer and you have children, could we edit this gene and essentially not pass it forward? There's a ton of work going on with that. So preventative is a very big part of this. But exactly like what you said, if you just got a diagnosis and you have this disease, is there a therapy today where we can use your own cells out of your body, exactly like you said, edit them, put them back into your body and let those new cells, as I tend like to say, you know, especially with CAR T, you'll hear that term a lot, CAR T treatments for cancer. You know, it's like supersonic T cells. I tend to give the general public the idea of imagine if we took your cells and turned them into Navy SEALs and then put them back into your body and let them go after your cancer. Well, where does that go to, Vicky, when you start to think about like tumors and you start to think about chemotherapy and radiation? Right now we do all of these things. It's a shotgun blast to kill a gnat, right? It's we target patients in such a way to irradiate their systems to try to get after these cancers. When we can start taking targeted cells and put them in your body and say, now go target that tumor in your breast, I think it really changes the future of medicine. Because the question becomes, are we going to see chemotherapy go away in 5 to 10 years? Are we going to see even the removal of tumors go away, right? When we can start to use these cells in the way that they're so powerful and can help our own bodies.
Are there companies like yours in California or in the country? I mean, how many of there are you?
So yeah, no,
because you mentioned there's over 3,000 patents being filed right
yes,
now.
Yes, yeah, 3,200 actually pending FDA approval. So that means they've already gone through all their clinical trials and they're in different stages of now they've applied to the FDA and they're waiting to get approved. So tremendous effort to get to that point. So there are companies like ours that work in research that will just help, you know, kind of preclinical work in research. There's a few more that would help potentially with like clinical trials. Like sometimes you hear the term CDMOs or CROs, which might help with a clinical trial. In the space that we're talking about today, that last mile to patients, we don't have a competitor in that space. And it's really, I think, us taking years of expertise, like you said, in both those two previous buckets and saying, we know how to do this. We know how to isolate the cells. We know how to keep them stored at different temperatures and keep their viability and structure. Now let's add in that last piece to patients that hospitals are having such a hard time getting online. Right. Even within our own region, it's very hard. And people are traveling to Texas. They're traveling to Stanford. They're traveling all these places. So I love this region. You know, I graduated from Sac State. I was a made it Sac State candidate and received a Distinguished Service Award from them, which I'm so honored for. But I'm really passionate about my own community. So how can we do this here? You know, you shouldn't have to travel to get access to this. And I think more so, you shouldn't need to be wealthy or be able to take tremendous times off work just to have your own life saved.
That was going to bring me to my next question. Why Folsom?
Yeah. Well, so I came up here actually to go to Sac State, and I did a quarter at UC Davis too as well, but came up here out of Santa Barbara to be here and really started calling this home. I will tell you that from a lot of the private equity and sort of business world, you know, you see a lot of companies leave our region, they go to San Francisco. I decided to stay, and I'm so happy that we did, because there was that push initially, like, do you just go to the Bay Area and, you know, raise money and do these kind of things? And so I really felt at home here, and I love our hospital partners in the region, and I'm so passionate for people to get access to care. So I've stayed, and we've grown here. You know, we're now in multiple states as well. So we have a number of locations around the United States.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with CGT Global based in Folsom. And that is diving into the world of stem cells and gene editing with the hope of speeding up advancements for new treatments and cures for patients diagnosed with cancer and other serious conditions. So CRISPR, or the people who created CRISPR.
Jennifer Duanda, yeah.
Yes, from UC Berkeley, mm-hmm. Received the Nobel Prize not that long ago, like 2020. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, a relatively new field, I think, when it comes to medical research. But it also can make people a little uncomfortable, a little weary. It's been subject to scrutiny. When it comes to the potential cons of this, you know, we already talked about it being only for the privileged, but also being open to misuse or long-term unknowns. What protections need to be put in place?
Yeah, so, you know, we participate in a lot of different associations. There's one called ARM, and with the federal government. We also participate with the FDA and the NIH in looking at exactly what you said, sort of like ethical concerns and where do we not make those regulatory things so heavy that we actually drive the cost up, right? So there's a real balance there with thinking that with entities that have gotten through FDA approval, they've done that heavy lifting. They've showed sort of those components and the ethicalness and the safety to patients, right? But we also don't want to go crazy with regulation to where, again, that 2.2 million sickle cell treatment becomes 3.2 million next year, right? So we've got to be really cognizant on the cost. I think that one of the things that you're touching on that I see a lot of people say is, you know, if you carry the gene, for example, Vicky, to carry, you know, to have breast cancer and you are going to have children, you want to deal with this not only for yourself, for your future, but your children. I think people start to get really worried and say, well, what if it was to make you taller? What if it was to make your skin a different color? What if it was to make your eyes bluer? What if it was to create these sort of, you know, perfect situations? People get very concerned about that. And I think that's very valid. And the FDA has done a really good job. And I think societally wise, right, we've said, you know, what we're willing to look at or not. But I strongly believe that for some people out there, I completely respect their decision. If they're like, you know, I feel like, you know, I wouldn't want to have this done for me and my family. Completely respect that. But I also am of the position that we need to not limit it for other people then. Because, you know, these diseases, just to give one to you, for example, like Bayer has this very exciting one on Parkinson's. I just had a friend of mine's wife who passed away from Parkinson's. And if you've ever known anyone who's died of these diseases, it's traumatic. And the new therapy that's coming on the market for Bayer that just made it through phase two is moving into phase two trials with the FDA is actually injecting cells in neural tissue into the brain to actually be able to reverse the effects of Parkinson's. It's extremely exciting. I'm just over the moon to get to work with some of these people and these amazing scientists and medical doctors that are in this space. But I'm so focused on the logistics, right? Like, okay, now we get approval. Now what? Right? We can't just have this only available here. This needs to be a global presence that allows access to these.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, there's, of course, altruism, but there's also, in healthcare, there's a profit to be made as well. Yeah. It is a business. Do you foresee challenges when it comes to healthcare and coverage, insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies? You know, by curing someone of a disease or a condition, you don't need medicine for it, right?
Yes, I think it changes the whole structure. I really do think it's a revolution for medicine that we're seeing here. And it's already started. You know, it's not like it's coming. It's here. It's fully here. The second part that to what you're saying is hospitals need to pivot in this space, right? So a lot of them have spent the last decade opening chemotherapy plants, right? Plants or treatment centers, right? And so I've talked to these hospital executives and said, what we need to start thinking about is how do we take 25% of that facility where you're giving chemo and give people back cells using the same infrastructure that you've put in, right? How do we start to make that curve in the road that's sort of coming? But the other part to what you're mentioning is really just down to numbers. I think that if Blue Shield, and not to knock Blue Shield, but if Blue Shield were to look at this and say, okay, average cancer patient from diagnosis, about 1.2 million. Okay, that includes removing a tumor, chemo, radiation, XYZ. If we can get the cost of a cell therapy down to like $800,000-$900,000, it financially makes sense. Right. So I think this is why pricing is very, very key to access. We can't price it to the moon and then expect, you know, insurance companies to just start doling out access. It's not a reasonable approach. So we're very focused on that cost. And again, sort of through partnerships with our entities, we don't have to put this on them. And I'll share one thing, too, is that I was out at Dana-Farber's facility a handful of months ago. They spent $30 million, you know, building out what is an ability to manufacture their own CAR Ts in their own center. They are almost at max capacity. There's not enough rooms, patients, bookings, everything to make this work. So if I were to look at, you know, Sutter, Dignity, Kaiser in this region and other partners, you know, do they have $30 million sitting here today, right, to be able to build this up? The majority of hospitals, are their margins are like less than 2%. So they don't have the money to pivot like that. What my focus is saying, they don't have to build it. We can partner with them. We become that sort of connector between pharma and healthcare, and we become an outside clinic that is helping these partners doing their cell and gene therapy work in-house.
In the last 30 seconds or so we have, people may be learning about this for the first time or just realizing, you know, the magnitude of this, you know, and what is here and what is to come. What would you like people to take away from this conversation?
So, I mean, on a real personal level, if this is something brand new to you, I really strongly suggest where you can, you know, go online and try to read about this. The CRISPR technology, Walter Isaacson just did a new book called Codebreakers. You can pick that up, I'm sure, at a lot of places and read about these type of gene editings going on. There's another great book, Cells Are the New Cure. But I would say if you are a patient today, please go and get online and research today what access you have, because you may be being treated by a physician who doesn't even realize today that there's one of these therapies that just got approved. And so we have to kind of own our own space here, too, with being advocates, not only for family members, but for ourselves and our children, around how do we sort of say, I want the best. I want the best option available to try to save my life or my family member's life.
Kate, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kate Spears is the CEO and founder of CGT Global, based in Folsom, with a focus on stem cell and gene therapies. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.